My name is Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we have for you this week.
Coming up today, Tom will see why a brand new JetBlue Airbus A321neo diverted to Shannon, while I see how Boeing's delivery delays are starting to impact airlines.
I'll see how UPS is becoming USPS, while Joe looks at the strong signals of confidence from Asian airlines.
Finally, Tom will run down some of the best April Fools we've seen from airlines this year.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And, you know, I wanted to start by talking about JetBlue and an Airbus A321neo, because I know Boeing aircraft, any little incident has sort of been flagged over with them. And, you know, some of the press has been accused of just focusing on that.
Yeah.
There was quite a significant Airbus A321neo incident this week. So an A321neo operated by JetBlue diverted to Shannon in Ireland on Saturday, and this was after the pilots had to shut down one of the engines mid-flight. So this aircraft was cruising over the Atlantic Ocean already when the right-hand engine compressor reportedly stalled, forcing the crew to declare an emergency. According to the Aviation Herald, the flight JBU-2220 was en route from Heathrow to JFK on Saturday, and the aircraft operating the flight was registered as November 2180 Juliet. It pushed back from gate A19 at the time of 7:25 GMT, and that's according to FlightAware data. It was only a short taxi to runway 27 left, and it departed at 7:38. You know, everything seemed fine. It was airborne, it climbed, gained altitude, and continued flying west for about 5 minutes before it turned slightly north onto the sort of short Great Grand Circle flight path. Now, nearly half an hour into the flight, the aircraft reached its cruising altitude of 34,000 feet, and it was traveling at around 530 miles per hour. Do you want more numbers?
It's a lot of numbers for a morning.
I know, numbers. it's afternoon now, Joe, come on. For the next hour, it continued flying west. It flew over Ireland and it started going over the Northern Atlantic in what appeared to be an uneventful flight. But at around 9:20, the aircraft's estimated position suddenly changed to flying back towards Ireland. I say estimated because I think it went outside of the range of ADS-B coverage. According to the Av Herald, the aircraft was about 400 nautical miles west of Shannon when the crew needed to shut down the right-hand engine, and that was a PW1133G engine. The plane then gradually descended to 20,000 feet, as the pilots rerouted to Shannon. They called air traffic controllers at the airport to alert them of their emergency, requesting emergency services to await their arrival, and that's according to the Claire FM radio. It was slightly overweight from fuel, but it eventually landed safely on runway 6 at Shannon at about 10:53, so about 90 minutes after beginning its descent. Airport fire and rescue, as well as local fire department, National Ambulance Service, and the police were alerted by ATC and responded to the aircraft as it taxied to the terminal. Thankfully, you know, as far as I understand, there were no problems with any of the passengers, so probably a bit of an overreaction, but it's better to be overprepared than underprepared.
Absolutely.
Whenever it comes to safety. So JetBlue ended up sending another A321neo from Amsterdam to Shannon to pick up the stranded passengers. The thing that I find most interesting about this particular incident is the aircraft involved. And that's because the aircraft involved in the incident is brand new. It's an A321neo that was delivered to JetBlue on March 16th from Mobile, Alabama.
Wow,
Alabama.
It's very new.
Yeah, well, and to really show how new it is, it was then positioned from to New York on March 27th. On March 27th, it flew New York LAX. On March 28th, it flew LAX New York. On March 29th, it flew New York London. And then on March 30th was when this happened. So this was only the fourth revenue flight of this aircraft.
Wow.
And it still hasn't been, at the time of recording this podcast, it's still stranded in Shannon. So,
oh dear.
You know, it's
Not a good look, is it? I mean, if you bought a brand new car and on your fourth trip it packed up, you'd be pretty annoyed, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you'd probably even be calling it a lemon, you know?
Limon or citron in French, I think. So it's interesting you're talking about engine issues with Airbuses, because I'm going to come to that in a minute. But what I wanted to talk about first of all was the news last week that United Airlines is asking its pilots to voluntarily take some days off during May. This is due to delayed deliveries of new aircraft from Boeing. And as a result, the airlines had to reduce its forecasted flight hours. So the pilots have been asked to volunteer to have some time off, either unpaid or on short-term breaks, to reduce excess staffing. But this might not be the last time we see this sort of thing happen. A United spokesperson said that they will potentially be asking again during the summer, and it could even go on into the fall. So United says it was contractually due to receive 191 Boeing airplanes this year and 127 next year. However, now it expects only to get 88 this year and 64 in 2025. So you can see, as much as you can hold on to older aircraft for longer to try and backfill, this is quite a drop in what it was expecting to have to operate. Almost all of this shortfall is, of course, the beleaguered Boeing 737 MAX. So the airline had also expected not only to receive some of the regular MAX, but also some of its MAX 10 order this year. However, that aircraft is still not certified. In March, the airline told Boeing to switch some of its MAX 10 order to the already certified MAX 9 in a bid to get the aircraft sooner. But it's kind of still up and down how many MAX 10 it will eventually take. And this is just the latest in the kind of MAX crisis, or the newest MAX crisis, I guess, and how it's impacting beyond individual airlines. So reporting from Bloomberg today explored the effect it's having on leasing rates as well. And according to their reports, used jet rentals are now at their highest level for many years. According to data from Ishka, the cost of leasing a 737 MAX 9 of about 3 years old is now higher than it was before the pandemic. And it's not just the MAXs. The cost of the 737-900ER is at a record high rate as well. It's not just Boeing's, because similar trends are being seen over at Airbus jets as well, with NEO and CEO families of the used variety are now soaring leasing rates almost as high as they were before the pandemic. The problem now is that airlines are competing for a rapidly decreasing pool of available assets. This means the leases have the upper hands and they can move the planes from struggling airlines to those willing to pay more money, basically. Leasing rates definitely soared last year as air travel rebounded, but last year was also a record year for new aircraft orders. However, both Boeing and Airbus, to some extent, are struggling to lift their production rates. Boeing is being prevented from increasing production rates as investigations into quality control continue. Output is currently capped at 38 737 aircraft per month to ensure Boeing is putting its focus on safety and improving its manufacturing processes. But, you know, Airbus isn't having the easiest ride either. Its deliveries are ramping up, but supplier constraints are slowing progress to get to where it wants to be. There's also this Pratt & Whitney engine issue. I hasten to say maybe it's not connected to your JetBlue story, but maybe it is. It's currently grounding hundreds of A320 family jets, and this is further squeezing availability in the narrowbody market. It's kind of a shame, because my second story today I'm going to talk about in a bit is about how well airlines are recovering since the pandemic. But, you know, that recovery needs to be supported by a solid supply of aircraft for them to fly. And at the moment, narrowbodies are in kind of a bit of a shortage.
It's interesting, because this is exactly what Michael O'Leary was saying to me. I know we talked a bit about that last week, but, you know, the prices are doubling, you know, and the demand is awful. But, you know, it's better. He also mentioned it's better to make sure that you're getting aircraft where there's not spanners under the floorboards and take the time to sort that out. So,
yeah, that's very true.
Speaking of airlines that operate a lot of Boeing airplanes.
Or airlines that find spanners under the floor.
No, I don't know that this airline has found spanners under the floor yet. But worst segue ever. I'm just going to dive right into it. You know, government contracts are highly sought after in many businesses, including in aviation. And what's quite interesting is recently the USPS, the United States Postal Service, and FedEx did not manage to reach an agreement to extend their sort of long-running agreement. For over 20 years, FedEx has been flying mail around the US for the United States Postal Service, and possibly even internationally. You know, the latest contract has been in place for at least 5.5 years, but they were unable to really flesh things out in a suitable way. So now UPS is going to be taking over from FedEx, managing the USPS's aerial postal needs.
Oh.
It's quite interesting because a guy called Faisal Herzi, who's an aviation analyst at Edward Jones, says, actually, it's not a huge loss for FedEx as a business because it wasn't the most profitable segment, but the thing it did offer was consistent revenue. But the loss of the contract at FedEx could have reportedly result in the termination of nearly 300 pilot jobs because the Airline Pilots Association International, otherwise known as ALPA, said, with each new announcement, FedEx management continues to threaten FedEx employees' job security and quality of life. According to the Associated Press, during FedEx's third quarter earnings call, it had shared that negotiations between FedEx and the USPS were still taking place. But just 1 week later, talks ended, and it just took one business day for the new contract with UPS to be announced. The company shared that there'll be a transition period, but afterwards it will become the primary carrier for USPS and transport most of the air cargo in the United States. So talking about this, the UPS chief executive officer, somebody called Carol B. Tomei, said, together UPS and USPS have developed an innovative solution that is mutually beneficial and complements our unique, reliable, and efficient integrated network. I decided to take a little dive into the USPS fleet to see what sort of aircraft your packages will be flying around on, thanks to our friends at CH Aviation. And they've got a really impressive lineup of aircraft, from the fairly young Boeing 747-8F to older aircraft such as the MD-11F.
Cool.
So I've got quiz time now. What would you guess the average age of the UPS fleet is, Jo?
I reckon it's quite old, maybe 30 years.
Not quite. Oh. It's actually 21.5 years. So a really brief rundown of what they actually have, because I just found it really impressive. They've got 52 Airbus A300-600 freighters.
Wow.
I didn't even know this was still a thing. You know, I know it's still a thing, but, you know, it still always amazes me that the 300 is still flying.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got an average age of 21.3. Then there are two Boeing 747-400 BCFs, Boeing converted freighters. They've got an average age of 30.4. That's supplemented by 11 Boeing 747-400 FSCDs. Now, I'm not sure what FSCD stands for, so apologies there. But they've got an average age of 20.9 years. There's also 30 Boeing 747-8Fs. These are the youngest sort of subfleet, at 4.7 years of age on average. They've got 75 Boeing 757-200 PFs at an average age of 30.6 years old. One Boeing 767-300ER, just standard one, that's 13.6 years old. Five 767-300ER BCFs at 21.6 year old. Four 767-300ER BDSFs at 26.8 year old. I just love that all of the different BCF, BDCF, SCDs sort of comes into its own aircraft category. And they've also got 78 sort of made as freighter Boeing 767-300Fs. And these are have an average age of 15.5 years old. But what I find interesting is this fleet of 767-300 freighters is actually still growing. The youngest aircraft in the fleet haven't even been delivered yet. You know, they're just 0.3 years old, having just taken their first flight, and there's still a backlog. So if you want to see 767 freighters, UPS is your place. Finally, they've got 40 MD-11 freighters at an average age of 29.6 years old. But what do you think the oldest aircraft is?
I reckon they've got a really old A300 in there.
It's actually a Boeing 757-200 PF that is 30.72 years old.
Wow.
And that was actually delivered to UPS.
Nice,
It did leave briefly to go somewhere else, but came back.
I did look up your acronym there. So FSCD stands for freighter with side cargo door. So while the 747 has the nose lifting, obviously at some airports it's easier to load from the side because that's just how they're set up. So these are the ones with the special side cargo doors. So now
I know exactly. Well, okay. Now what about BDSF?
I know that one. That's a Bedeck special freighter, and that's something to do with the way it's. I don't know. Why don't we do? I'll tell you what. We'll do an article for Simple Flying on all the designations of the Boeing 747 and explain it all in there with proper
research.
Well,
that's the 767.
Is it? Okay.
We can do all of the freighter.
I think that's a conversion then. If it's a BDSF, it's like a Bedeck converted special freighter. And the BCFs are the Boeing converted freighters. So they used to be passenger planes, but have now been
converted. Oh, yeah, it's a Bedeck special freighter.
There we go. Mm. I knew what it meant. I just wasn't sure what it meant.
What it meant. Well, we'll come back to this in a future Simple Flying article. I don't think we'll go on the... Well, maybe we do the podcast. We'll see.
Well, let us know if you want us to run down all the different designations of aircraft and bore you to death with those. But in the meantime, I wanted to turn my attention a little bit to Asia. Because when you're thinking about post-COVID recovery, most of our regions in the world had a nice recovery spike in 2022. And then there was even more growth in 2023, so much so that some of the regions are outperforming their pre-COVID numbers in terms of passenger traffic. But the last region to really jump on the recovery train was Asia Pacific. It was one of the last to unlock. It was one of the last to remove all the barriers to travel. And now we're kind of seeing the recovery in full steam, both in passenger numbers and, most excitingly, in aircraft orders. So let's look at the passenger numbers first. In February, the Association of Asia Pacific Airlines, or APA, as they sometimes call themselves, reported that there were over 27 million international passengers carried to and from the region during February, which is a 56.7 increase year on year. It's still a little bit down on the 29.5 million that they carried in February pre-COVID 2019, but it is progress, and it represents just over 90% of passenger traffic pre-pandemic. But the demand is definitely there because the APA figures also showed that in February, load factors were at almost 82%, which is kind of a little bit higher than the 80% that was typical in February 2019. So there's still a little way to go before we hit 100% of 2019 levels, but it's clear to see that confidence in airline businesses has been renewed. And this has become apparent through a flurry of orders and some very exciting order rumours over the past few weeks from Asian Airlines. So towards the end of March, I'm not sure we spoke about this on the podcast, but apologies if I am repeating, we had a confirmation of the long-rumoured order from Japan Airlines, which saw it for the first time breaking its exclusivity on Boeing narrowbodies and going for an Airbus narrowbody. So all in, the airline ordered up 42 aircraft. 10 of these were the Boeing 787-9. All the 32 other planes were Airbus, so I'll leave you to fill in the blank there. On the wide-body side, it ordered 23 more A350-900s. Japan Airlines is really interesting with the 900 because it uses it almost exclusively on domestic routes. There's just that many people travelling around Japan. Also, some regional routes that are very high traffic as well.
I mean, I think they've also got some of the 787s that are just solely domestic.
Exactly. They've got some very high-density ones that don't really have the usual cabin configuration, but basically get as many people as possible from A to B as quickly as possible, which is what Japan demands, apparently. But it also, and this excited me, ordered another 11 A350-1000s. If you remember, I went to the delivery of its first in December last year, and it is beautiful. It's a very lovely airplane. These, of course, are for international routes and will enable expansion of its most in-demand international network. Most interestingly, though, as I mentioned, was the first Airbus narrowbody order for the airline. Only 11, but the A321neo, which is very exciting for it. I wonder if 11's a lucky number in Japan, because I'm thinking 11 A350-1000s, 11 A321neos. Maybe that's a reason, because normally they like a nice round 10 or 15. So we'll get back to you on that anyway. But for Japan Airlines, none of these are coming very soon. They'll start delivering in 2027 and beyond, but it starts to show us the shape of the future fleet over there. Moving further west, Korean Air placed a major wide-body order with Airbus as well. The contract was worth $13.7 billion and it ordered 33 A350s to replace some of its older fleet. So it did order both types. 27 were the largest A350-1000 and just 6 were the smaller A350-900s. In particular, those A350-900s, it said, were preparing it to integrate better with its future absorbing airline Asiana, which already operates 15 A350-900s. So it'll have a nice fleet of around 21 as and when that deal goes through. So these were firm order announcements, but they've come along with some really interesting order rumours as well. IndiGo, which is India's leading low-cost airline, has indicated its interest in acquiring wide-body aircraft. And reports are suggesting IndiGo could order up to 30 Airbus A350s for its international operations. Up until
now, I thought
that
was an April Fool's.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I think it was a bit early for that. I think it's true. I mean, you know, I'll eat my hat later if it turns out to be nonsense.
No, it's probably just I saw it on that day. But
so it has exclusively been flying with the A320 family. It has a couple of ATRs for specific regional operations. But wide bodies aren't completely unfamiliar territory because it has been using a pair of 777s that are on lease from Turkish Airlines. So this is kind of a natural evolution, but I do think it will be interesting to see how the kind of low-cost, long-haul thing works for this airline because it runs on the thinnest of profit margins. One final one from Asia. So China's Hainan Airlines could be in the market for some A330s, specifically the A330-900 or NEO. There's been no order announcement, but eagle-eyed people noticed a stock exchange filing just this morning that showed the airline had ordered kitchen equipment for the A350-900s. Now, it hasn't got any of those, so that would suggest maybe it's planning to get some, although why you'd order the kitchens before the plane, I don't know how airlines work. That's kind of crazy. Anyway, the airline bought 20 kitchen equipment sets from Safran for the A330neo, which suggests that it could order up to 20 planes in the coming months. My very final one, I'm straying a little bit away from the Asia focus here, but I was so excited I couldn't let it go past without mentioning it. Ethiopian Airlines is going to be the first African airline to order the Boeing 777X. It indicated its intent to place a firm order for up to 20 777-9s, although that order is yet to become firm, and of course the aircraft's not certified yet, but that's exciting to me.
It definitely is. Well, I briefly looked and I couldn't find any sort of relation between the number 11 and luck or in Japan. So
okay.
If anyone does know, please write in and let us know.
Absolutely. Maybe it's just a very refined accounting process that came to the number 11 and not luck.
Perhaps. Well, I briefly mentioned April Fool's just then, and I wanted to dive into that a bit more because that's my favourite day of the year when it comes to aviation news. I wanted to just quickly run down some of the best aviation April Fools that we saw. The first one was Etihad. They teased that they would be launching a luxury apartment tower that would have its own runway. It's going to be 380 stories tall. And yeah, it's the sort of interior looks just like an A380's interior. So I thought that was quite funny. I don't think it was quite as good as the previous Emirates April Fools that we've seen, like the food delivery one. And
I like the cruise one, Emirates Cruise Lines. I think that was 21. That was so funny.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. It's a bit more realistic.
So many people ran it as a genuine news story, which always makes me chuckle.
I mean, you know, I can't really knock people doing unrealistic A380 stories, though, but we can get to that shortly. WestJet kind of were cannibalizing their own market with their April Fools. They were going to launch this Memories headset, which you basically put on. It's powered by AI, and then you can have your holiday without leaving your living room. Why you'd want to do that, I don't know. Denver Airport decided that they were going to be launching mobile TSA checks for your flight, so you could just get picked up and do TSA at your home and then drive straight to the airport gate. Holiday Pirates revealed that an unnamed European airline was going to be installing thermal cameras inside its planes to penalise people passing wind.
Yeah.
The one that I love most, because it got you out as well, was that the TSA revealed that they were going to be launching a TSA PreCheck line of clothing. And they had in their post, they had a link to the shop, bit.ly/shop TSA, and I managed to get you to click on it. And what was it, Joe?
I got Rickrolled. Yeah. Fully. It was Rick Astley.
That was amazing. Another one that I didn't really like so much, but I don't want to leave it out, is EasyJet Holidays rebranding to EasyJet Holly Bobs.
That's a very British thing. Middle-aged women in the UK do say Holly Bobs quite a lot, but it doesn't travel to bit.
Unoriginal to me, you know, like it's a bit, yeah, last minute, I don't know. Frontier revealed that they would be taking some wide-body planes to fly to Bora Bora. Finnair, I don't think this one should be an April Fool's, actually. Finnair revealed that they were going to start serving strawberry juice instead of blueberry juice on board.
That would cause literal protests in all the Nordics, I'd say.
Yeah. I'm not saying instead of, but you know, like, as well as? Think about this. Fly Safair is a South African carrier. They said that they were going to be sort of timing people to be in their seat by 3 minutes to improve timeliness.
That's not a bad idea, you know.
Yeah, I know. Jetstar said that it was going to start charging $2 to use the armrests on its flights. I don't think that's actually totally ridiculous either. I could see a low-cost carrier doing that one day.
I think Michael O'Leary would be right in there if he thought he could get away with it.
Yeah, well, I did ask him what the next ancillary product would be, and he said, I don't know, because if we knew, we'd already be charging for it. maybe, who knows? And finally, Simple Flying announced that it was going to acquire Airbus A380 as London office space, and that we're going to be positioning the aircraft on a barge in the Thames, similar to the Concorde at the Intrepid Museum in New York. And actually, that went down quite well. You know, that was by far our most viewed article of the day. Everyone went crazy for it. So clearly we were onto something. I did love that the registration would be A-F-O-O-L.
I did enjoy all of those. They were so funny. And it's lovely to see airlines having a bit of fun on April Fool's Day. I think it's even better now with the advent of like AI image generation, because they can actually like create stuff that doesn't exist. Like I saw Loganair on Instagram posted a photo of Loganair A380, which I have to say looks awesome with a tartan tail, but clearly that's not ever happening. JetBlue also posted a photo of Nathan's famous hot dog stand actually doing the rounds with the little brolly on it and everything down the aisle of the aircraft. It was a fun April Fool's Day. I don't know if any of you guys got caught out by them. I think we nearly fell for a couple, but we managed to put a lid on it quite quickly. But thank God that's over for another year. It's not my favourite day, because I am quite gullible and I do tend to go, that's a great story, and then think, hang on a minute.
I mean, the worst thing for me was that I forgot that it was April Fool's Day. I thought it was still the next day. And then somebody messaged me about our A380 article. And I was like, oh my God, has that already gone out? That's not good. And then I realized, hang on. So I managed to kind of like April Fool's myself, maybe. My highlight was that we had an AI image of somebody hand painting the A380 as if it was like the size of a model.
Excellent. Love it. Well, it was a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed it too. But I think that's all we've got time for on today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed this as well, and welcome your feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. And thanks for listening.
Bye.